most of your leads that are purchased in the trades, what I call purchased, I mean, you may purchase them through something like Angie's List or or whatever they're calling it now. I guess they've merged together, Home Advisor. I mean, those are okay to use when you first get started, but if you stay with them after about year three, they do become the crack cocaine of marketing. You're competing with multiple people. It's a race to the bottom, but you got to start somewhere when you're brand new.
You're listening to Estimate Rocket Radio, the hassle-free online software for service contractors that keep your business running from lead to pay. We want your business to grow, so we make it easy to get your job done.
Hey everyone, it is a great day at Estimate Rocket Radio, and I want to give you all a very warm welcome. My name is Kathleen. I'm a co-owner here at Estimate Rocket, and I'm joined by my very dynamic co-host, Chris Shank, who is our leader of education and engagement at Estimate Rocket University. Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm great, and it's very nice to be with you, my dynamic co-host, Kathy.
I love when you talk like that. Today, we are super excited to have in the Estimate Rocket Radio studios with us, Brandon Lewis. I've known Brandon Lewis personally, and I think you have too, Chris, for so many years. Brandon is celebrating 7 years as the founder of Academy for Professional Painting, and he also is the publisher of Painters Weekly.
So we are in the middle of our Vision Conference at Estimate Rocket. We're talking about sales planning. The second half of the Vision Conference, we'll be talking about profit planning. It's 10 weeks of pretty neat sessions going over how to collect data, how to analyze trends, and then plugging that information into actual numbers that you're trying to hit for sales and profit. So we picked Brandon's brain and it was awesome. I know it seems all over the place, but if you want something super structured and linear, attend the Vision Conference. But in this, just enjoy this rapid fire with Brandon Lewis. And he does really good on his feet. He is a thinker and he has very strong processes that he leads business owners through. You might want to check him out at Painters Academy. He talks about generating leads, how to go to your repeat business lists, generating new leads, course correction for your sales numbers, training and accountability for employees to hit those numbers. It's great. At the end of the day, this guy always gets you thinking.
Well, welcome, Brandon, to Estimate Rocket Radio. We are thrilled to have you here.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Miss Kathy, and it's great to join you and Chris for this, and I hope that your audience gets a ton out of it.
You probably won't disappoint us, as you never do, with some challenging thoughts and maybe some controversial thoughts. You always bring something really cool to the table and make us think in different ways, turn the conversation on its head a little bit. But that's what I'm looking forward to. Are you ready for that, Brandon?
I'm ready. I try to stay away from controversy and keep my to myself largely.
I'm just going to say, wait, Chris, I like to be the controversial one.
Kathy, okay.
That's the Irish side of me.
That's right. Well, this is going to be fun. And Brandon, it's so cool to be on a podcast again with you. We are talking this month and for the next few months at Estimate Rocket about sales planning, profit planning. And we thought, let's bring on Brandon. Brandon will have some neat thoughts. Mm-hmm. Brandon, you work with a bunch of business owners and you have great systems. You're walking people through this stuff all the time. And so we just kind of want to start with this whole idea of when you're talking to business owners, how do you start the conversation about sales planning and kind of planning ahead for the next year, the next 2 years, or however far you guys plan out? What do you start with?
The first thing I will readily admit that, and I work in full disclosure, in the painting industry primarily, well, almost exclusively with repaint contractors. However, the business systems that are in plumbing, roofing, electrical are almost identically the same, except when you get into a little bit of design build, there's a stagger step in the sales process where you do the design consultation. But aside from that, the fundamentals are very similar. And truthfully, most of our owners do not do much in the way of sales planning, but the more advanced companies that tend to be up in the $2 to $3 million range, who have multiple sales representatives and a few middle layer operational folks, those are the ones that tend to really sink their teeth into sales forecasting and reaching sales numbers in the next year, because they have to in order to keep everybody working.
And now, real quick, and it's funny you say that because that seems to be my impression too with a lot of the business owners that I've been around, that this may not be a common practice. One, maybe because they don't know how to, but maybe they just don't know that they should even, not just that you don't know how, but that you don't even have the know why, maybe, not just the know how. Do you think that's accurate?
Well, it's a little bit of both. You've got to remember that the career path for 90 some odd percent of individuals that are in home services is that they were a technician, then they became a crew leader, typically. Mm-hmm. And then one day they walked out and decided to start their own business. And so then, even though all the technical skills are there, the sales, tracking, administrative, operational management, recruiting, and hiring responsibilities are kind of dumped into their lap. And so they can paint a project, plumb a project, put a roof on a building, landscape a project. Now they have to do all these additional functions in order to close the job and produce it profitably or to generate the lead. And a lot of this is just kind of alien, and people pick it up as they go. I would say that most of your listeners likely look at this less from a forecasting standpoint and more from a, how do I make more money doing what I'm already doing? And then also just kind of this general idea of how do I improve my business and grow it? But typically, most that I work with are not as they do not look as far down the calendar as they likely should. Though a few of them do.
So Brandon, if you had to give our customers advice, how would you guide them in collecting various numbers throughout the year to prepare for sales planning? What would you have them look at?
So this is a process that I especially take our platinum members through because I work with them one-on-one, not so much people that are in our group program. And we start off with an 11-point assessment. And a lot of it has to do with reaching your goals the next year. So we look at preceding years, year to date, depending on when they join that program. And then we look into the next year. And so one of the first things I think it's important to think about is, you know, where are your leads coming from? Because there are some numbers that make a big difference in sales forecasting, and those are your average transaction size, your close rate, and your cost of sale. We'll talk about those a little bit more, later. But when your leads are coming from, are they repeat clients? Meaning, are they people that have done business with you in the past? Are they referred business from an end user? Meaning that most of your businesses are likely divided among commercial and residential, with probably a focus on residential. So are they referred businesses from the end user? Are they B2B referrals from other tradespeople or insurance adjusters or real estate agents or property inspectors? Are they commercial prospecting leads? Are they paid online leads, organic leads from digital web properties that the company owns? Or are they generated through operational marketing? You show up to do a job. Is it yard signs and distribution and canvassing or clip flyers? How are you getting the phone to ring in those manners? So there's a handful of ways that these leads are generated, but they have a specific lead type. And that lead type really has a lot to do with how much or how little of something you're going to have to do in order to hit your sales goals. And we're not really talking about profitability today. But, you know, profitability comes to play as well.
What does a strategy look like? So you talked about what things you could do, but how would you help them set that goal? Does that make sense?
Yeah. And taking a step back, you know, we talk about where your lead's coming from. And there's really two ways that you can do that before we move into the next part.
Yeah, okay.
Important. Number one, there are two ways that people tend to track things. The most common way, which is pretty darn misleading, is just asking people how they heard about you. Now, that is better than not tracking it at all, but I know from firsthand experience, and our members do as well, if you put lead source categories in your intake survey that you do not use, if you say TV, if you say newspaper, if you say Yellow Pages, if you say Twitter advertising, whatever. A lot of people will pick places you've never been because they don't really know. Like a lot of people just don't remember. So that's always a little dicey. The more appropriate way is if you're spending money, especially with in a significant amount of money, is to do direct link or phone tracking, meaning that you drive people to a customized URL or you use cookies or some other form of Google Analytics traffic to see where the leads come from, or you drive them to a call tracking feature like CallRail or some other software platform. And again, these tend to be things that are larger companies that are a little bit more sophisticated use. But if you're going to spend $2,000-$3,000 a month on a specific lead generation strategy to hit your sales goals, it's really kind of irresponsible not to spend the extra $10 to $50 to set up a landing page or something that lets that makes your advertising dollars more accountable.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. So you're saying you got to have the framework for understanding how successful some of your planning is in your tactics are going to be.
Yes, absolutely. Because I cannot tell you how, because the three metrics that really matter, Chris, are transaction size, closing rate, and cost of sale. Are the three big ones. And a lot of times people will spend an enormous amount of money on lead generation to hit their sales goals. But then when I ask them, okay, this $7,000-$8,000 a month that you're spending, which sources are really performing well, which sources are not performing well, because we may need to shift some things around. And most often they can't really tell me.
Right.
They know they're spending money, but what I do know, luckily from working with the second largest painting franchise for about 4 years, I was able to look at their data and reinforce a lot of the preconceived notions and prejudices that I had, which is, you know, your repeat business, your transaction sizes are typically, you know, much larger, for example. And of course, your transaction sizes will vary here based upon the audience and the trade. But most people that had repeat or had their first transaction size through online leads that were generated cold through any medium, although some perform better than others, $1,700, $1,800 per transaction. But the repeat transactions were like $3,200, $3,400. Mm. Your cost of acquisition is lower and your close rate is higher. Right. And that means if you're going to put your money somewhere first, you start with the things that make you the most money, that have the largest transaction sizes and the highest closing rates with the lowest acquisition cost, what we call cost per sale, then you work your way backwards. And but there is a limitation, right? If you're trying to grow rapidly and you have a small in-house list, there's only so much you're going to be able to get from those efforts. Same thing with operational marketing. But there are other things you can do that you can spend time and money on to increase those numbers of first-time transactions. And so doing some very simple division and multiplication to determine what these numbers are can really let you know, wow, we don't need to be fishing in this pond. We need to be fishing in that pond.
Exactly. Right. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the percentages for the repeat business, that's pretty high.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you're pushing a lot with when people are doing sales planning and when you're helping businesses, you're saying, first of all, are you capturing your repeat? That's one of the first things you push them to. It sounds like, mm-hmm. Look at the numbers. How are you capturing that information? And then you help them understand how to capture that repeat business, right?
Yeah. It's almost like, I guess a good way to put it, and I'm just reaching for an analogy here that's probably going to fall apart, but here we go.
Good. I like these.
I was outside. We've got, we call them pin oaks, and they're terrible. And they're in our backyard, and the leaves are like microscopically small, and they're the first ones to fall every year. And you want to get all the leaves out of the yard, but you don't start going into the nooks and crannies first, right? You try to get the big places that are the big messes. You try to use the blower first, anything that's fast and quick. And then you get down to the fact that you do have to use the rake, and then you do have to go in, then you got to make little small trips. And then eventually you're down to like almost sweeping up little handfuls of stuff, but you don't start with the handfuls. And that's what a lot of people do with their sales planning. They work on the things that are tertiary first, that are of least importance. Another analogy is like if people want to get in shape, you know, there are some things you start with. You know, you start with diet and exercise. Could you begin with supplements? And could you begin with education? You could.
I hear that all the time. People asking like, what vitamins should I be taking? I'm like, well, the vitamins, man, that's like 1-2% of the change that you're going to see. I'm like,
right.
Exactly. So
we love that, don't we?
Start with the low hanging fruit on the tree, the stuff right. that's easy to access, that takes very little effort to get, the things that are already ripe. Mm-hmm. And the things that, because, and for those who are listening who have businesses that are 3 years or older, the only real advantage you have, having been in business for 3 years that someone doesn't, that started yesterday, is you have this huge list of right. people that have done business with you, or in the case of those who use Estimate Rocket, you have also your unconverted leads, or we call them unconverted leads, but they're really unconverted estimates, people that you've written estimates for that did not buy, and maybe you gave up on them too early in the sales cycle, or this time wasn't correct, but they had a bad experience, and next time they'll buy from you. You've got this huge database of people that you have previously paid for to generate them as a lead in a very expensive way, but now they're sitting on a list. And you can now market to them for next to nothing. And in some cases, with text messaging and email and voice broadcast, oh, it is so cheap to reach them. So why go spend so much money to talk to total strangers that are unqualified? Although you will eventually get to it, don't get me wrong. We need to start where you've got a home field advantage and then work our way back to things like really targeted Facebook advertising, Google AdWords, things of that nature. But don't ever, you know, start with the stuff that really helps a lot first, and then work your way back down.
No, it's interesting. We had a rival champion on. We do this training called Rival, and it helps people rival their past personal best using Estimate Rocket and become a stronger competitor in the marketplace. So basically, we're teaching people how to use Estimate Rocket to make their business better. But we bring on what we call a rival champion every once in a while, somebody who's just completed a lot of estimates in Estimate Rocket. And today we all had on Rachel Garmers from Walls by Design. And I said, hey, I don't know if you know, Rachel, but your company has completed in the last couple of years that she's been there, 4,000 estimates.
Wow.
And that's mostly through her. She was saying they trained her when she came on, but they weren't deep into Estimate Rocket yet. So, but I'm tying this in because you don't realize sometimes, now those are not completed projects, you know, fully accepted proposals, but that is all leads in the system. Pretty solid leads to start the project. Or to start at least getting the information in there. And I imagine people don't realize that you have a list that big, that's that warm and ready. And I think that's why the repeat business message is so powerful, because people have money just sitting there. They don't know how to actualize it maybe. And that's, I think, what you do really well, Brandon.
I'll give you a perfect example. I was reviewing some numbers with a client 2 weeks ago, maybe three. And I'm a little bit blown away because they were small. They only had about 370 past clients. But when we started breaking down their leads or their closed projects by lead source, of course, now their repeat business closed. And I could not believe this because they really pushed the envelope on their prices. But they've got a great sales system. Their lead sources and the repeat and referral were closing at like in the 70 to 60 percentile. But they had like roughly 70 projects came out of past clients. And I looked at that and I was like, that is 20% of the people on your list bought from you this year. 20%. Mm. It's just a remarkably high number. Now, it may not be that high next year, but I often see that as people grossly underestimate the frequency with which people purchase, how much they purchase and how much they refer, but you do have to work it. They don't just magically do it. If you do not communicate with them, they will forget you and those numbers will not be there.
So I just want to tell you, Brandon, in Estimate Rocket, you can actually flag every single lead generation within your customer database. So if that customer came in from Facebook or Google Ads or a referral or Angie's List, a realtor or a builder, you can mark that in that customer file log, and then you can run reports And it's always nice to send people thank you notes, say if, you know, it was a referral or if it did come from a builder, it's nice to be able to send that builder a gift or even an email saying thank you. So it's nice to have that data to collect and to see where you're putting your ad dollars. If it's working, if it isn't working, you can change it up quickly so that you're not losing money on specific marketing dollars.
And if I could chime in here, using Estimate Rocket to do that or tracking it, however you do, if you're not a client of Estimate mm-hmm. Rocket yet, it's really important in today's world. Most of your leads that are purchased in the trades, what I call purchased, I mean, you may purchase them through something like Angie's List or whatever they're calling it now. I guess they've merged together, Home Advisor. Those are okay to use when you first get started, but if you stay with them after about year three, they do become the crack cocaine of marketing, because you're competing with multiple people. It's a race to the bottom, but you got to start somewhere when you're brand new.
There's my controversial piece. Yes, I got it.
It's not controversial.
I'm just kidding.
You shouldn't eat spam for three meals. That is controversial. It may be controversial, but it is also accurate.
Well, but they have, if you go to Hawaii, there's many flavors of spam. You can get pineapple, you can get hot and spicy.
I stand corrected. spam all around.
I love what you said. No, that's so good. And you say it in such a way too. I love it.
the good reason to track that stuff. Or if you, for example, you know, you sign up with a marketing agency and they always promise you the moon. I've worked with many over my career. A few can deliver, most cannot. And when you track your leads and you know, hey, I'm paying this for a lead, and this is three times more expensive than this, and the transaction size is low and the close rate is terrible. And oh, by the way, a lot of these people don't even show up for an estimate. When you're reviewing how you're spending your marketing dollars and your salespeople's time or your marketing time, because some of these things are really time-based, like operational marketing, B2B referral programs, commercial prospecting, that's really more time than money. You can look at it and then say, I'm sorry, I know you say that there's value and I know you say that you're delivering, but based on my lead tracking, you're not. And it doesn't allow your company to be held hostage as you do your sales planning for 2022 based upon the emotional feelings of somebody who, you know, is taking your money, but rather you can decide if their advice is well-founded or not based on the metrics.
God love those metrics. So Brandon, as you are into the year, how do you course correct if you find that all of a sudden you're not hitting your numbers?
Well, for example, let's say that you wanted to reach $1 million sales goal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you would start with something very simple. You could look at your historic numbers of, for example, repeat or referral business. And let's say your average transaction size for simple math, and I should have brought my calculator in here, is $3,000. So mm-hmm. that means that you have to do 33 jobs per 100. So that's 33 times 10, which means you'd have to do 330 repeat jobs to get there. But let's say your database is only 600 people. You can't possibly get there with that. Let's say referrals might be another 50 that you could get. You take that number that you're trying to hit from a sales standpoint, and of course, you should look at you know, personal profitability as the company owner, but let's say top line sales for now. That means you've got to get 330 jobs of referrals or repeats, but let's say that your average transaction through first-time clients through online cold lead generation is $1,500, but your organic leads are $2,000. So mm-hmm. you'll have an idea of what happened last year, what lead sources they came in through. And then you have to then look at your closing rate and then multiply or really divide that number by the closing rate. So for example, if you've got a 33% closing rate, which is kind of typical for cold online leads, if you've got a decent sales process, then you can back into that. And so, you know, okay, in this category, we've got to have this. In this category, we've got to have that. And then you decide, you try to start off stronger in your better categories and really push those. But if you can't make it in those premium categories where you make the most money for the least amount of marketing dollar and sales effort, then you have to work your way down and decide if you're going to spend yourself into the sales goal, or if because the cost of transaction size is, it digs into your personal profit, maybe there's a cutoff point for that. So it's something you can really determine quickly with some division and multiplication in an Excel spreadsheet. It's not very onerous. It's just kind of like a big complex word problem.
Yeah, but I think people need help walking through that process. And I know that's, again, something that you guys do over there at the Painters Academy really well. We've done some sessions before about winters coming and kind of preparing for some of those tough times when you do have to start, you know, I guess the real awareness of how well your planning is working, you know, it just hits you. And so sometimes there's some quick corrections that need to be made. And do you think that people, you talk about like simple calculations and stuff, but people probably struggle with that quite a bit, would you say?
Yes. I was on the phone with Andrew over at APC Magazine talking about their Tech Fest. I think that's what they call it, where yeah, I'm going to be presenting. And, you know, it's all about technology, right? But a lot of folks in the trades are really behind the technological eight ball more than I think. It's easy to get insulated. For example, everyone who works with Estimate Rocket is someone who's decided to walk into our current century and have a sales system that will actually work for both getting the estimate accurate, for presenting it professionally to the client, and for being able to track their database. And those are kind of quantum leaps in our trade, because I've done 2,400 now hour-long business diagnostics. And do you know what the number one technology tool that I have to recommend to our clients is, so that they can better manage their business?
What's that?
You're going to think this is crazy. You're going to think I'm a dinosaur, but it's not me. It's the industry. I have to recommend a program, which is very good, called Professor Teaches Excel, Word, and PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. And that's it. That's because if you think about it, if you came through high school, for whatever reason, they apparently don't think it's important to teach you things that are actually useful. And so you get out and, well, that's never been taught to you. And you went right into the trades, and you're primarily working in an analog world with your hands. Maybe the company has you fill out a timesheet digitally, but that's probably about it. Mm. And now you own a company, right? And so things that are very basic that they really don't even, in some cases, teach in college. I'm surprised at how many college students can't use the basic communication devices in a Microsoft Office suite. And of course, you know, Apple has their parallels. And so that's what I have to start with. And the technology deficit in the trades on the ownership side, it is very deep. It's very deep. It's a lot deeper than people think.
So Brandon, when you communicate your leadership goals to the rest of the team, how do you work on getting the buy-in?
Number one is, everyone that's on your team has a handful of metrics that go along with their personal performance. For example, for crew leaders, and this does go into sales planning, because if you can't produce it, you can't collect it. If you can't collect it, you can't hit your numbers for sales. They've got a few metrics. Number one is are you on budget with labor and material? We ask our guys to hit a 50% gross profits number, which means if you've got $10,000 in a project, 5,000 of it should be gross profits after labor, material, mm-hmm. and direct overhead. The second number is, we have a very easy to measure customer satisfaction metric that we survey at the end of every project. We used to try to do it digitally, but we got about 20% response when we went back to analog paper forms. We've got like a 90-something% response rate on that. So we use what works, no matter. We do not discriminate based upon medium. We just try to get the numbers. And then the third one is, you know, were the processes followed, and was your job packet turned in properly? So those are three very easy metrics to follow, and you can train them on how to make that happen. So there's the first is the metric. What's the metric assigned to the individual? And then the second part is the process. What input creates that output? What activities or processes are followed by that individual to render that metric, that output? What's the input process? And then as the owner, you know, your job is really to manage the person, to make sure they're following the process, and then to coach, encourage, persuade, incentivize them to do that because it is in the best interest of their role. It's in the best interest of the client, and it's in the best interest of the company. So if all three parties do not do well, people tend to not follow through on those processes that create the outputs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That was really good. When you I talk like about
something good, I'm glad.
Well, that wasn't just controversial. No, I'm kidding. So in the process of, what did you say? Coaching, encouraging, incentivizing, persuading. See, I listen. See, Brandon, I listen.
I know you've got excellent verbal comprehension.
But in this process, you talk about this packet and people having expectations and following through with obligations. That sounds like a very prepared plan, for what your employees are supposed to be doing. So you're not just coming up on it and saying, did you do what you're supposed to do? But no, you're actually, it sounds like you have, what's that?
That does not work. Verbal instructions are, you know, you might as well just go ahead and plan to be disappointed, and it will all be your fault.
You should have a disappointment plan. You should be like, how do I get through my disappointment? That should be
how
what
do
you
I handle disappointment?
Immediately pivot to managing your expectations, because you can't hold people accountable without processes, and verbal instructions are secondary or tertiary. We invented the printing press back in the 1400s for a reason. We should still be using it today, and either digitally or analog, whatever works for you. But yeah, guys need processes. Staff need processes. To wrap up that little thought on processes, you know, we primarily in the trades do the same things over and over and over again with slight variations. 80% of every project that you do is done just about the same way. And so everything that can be formalized should be, except, you know, there is that old 80-20 principle. You need to focus 80% of your efforts on 20% of the things that are really important. And then the other random 80%, you know, that's what staff meetings are for. That's what verbal communication is for. And you hope that stuff lives on in the institutional memory of your organization when that stuff's communicated. But you have to also be careful of overburdening your people with things that are ancillary and not important, because, you know, it does detract from the main thing, which you don't want to do.
And lastly, the processes that you're talking about, which are very, very planned out, very meticulous, it sounds like, in those packets, those are what you help your clients with, right? That's through your program?
Yeah. So, I mean, for example, and this would apply to everyone listening that runs a service business. There are a few things, right? You've got to schedule and plan a job from the office perspective, meaning there is a checklist or a process that you follow every time you do a project. It doesn't matter the type of project. And that's when, you know, the project gets handed over from sales to operations. And then you've got to delegate that responsibility of execution to the team member that's going to go out and do it. So there is a handoff. There's information to be handed off, instructions, typically materials, tools in some cases. And then the crew leader is then responsible to take that, go do the job, and bring back the check and a survey and some completed paperwork. And then your job at the office is then to process that transaction through, and then hand that client that you've just gotten completed on to your marketing team so that you can engage in customer retention practices through monthly communication. And so there's a life cycle for everything from the sales call from origin to completion, or if it never gets completed at all, if they never buy from you, that gets handed off to marketing again as well. for unconverted leads or estimates. So everything kind of happens in this, what I call one to many fashion, meaning just about everybody is communicated with in a home service company and even a commercial service company the same way the end users are. All processes and projects and sales calls go through a very similar process. And your job as the owner is to identify what really works to formalize it to the degree where it's helpful, but not overly complicated, and then encourage your people to use those processes so they hit their goals. I mean, it's very simple. And if you do anything repetitively, there needs to be a process and there needs to be a tool for it so that, you know, nobody has to remember anything. Everybody can just follow the process.
So Brandon, where can people go to find you? What information would you like to share with us that is available for them?
Well, you know, we have a very good report on the basics and fundamentals of growing a painting business. Likely would not fit you if you're not a painter. But if you are, paintersacademy.com, that's paintersacademy.com. And you can follow us. Probably where we're followed the most is YouTube, the Academy for Professional Painting Contractors. Lots of instructional videos there with big concepts that are eye-opening to people. I get tons of feedback from folks that go there, and I try to provide as much free instruction there as I can. And if you feel like you need any additional help, just email Brandon at paintersacademy.com and we'll get on the calendar.
Awesome. Are you on social media?
We are. We have a Facebook page. I would not say there's like a ton of interaction there, but we are there.
Okay.
Primarily, you know, people go to our website. They sign up for our free report. We do send out newsletters by email and text pretty frequently. And of course, we have a decent following on YouTube, and we pick up a lot of people at our Painting Profit Summit, which is the second largest industry event right now for independent painting contractors. So we love seeing people in person.
Yes, and I know Estimate Rocket is a proud sponsor of that event.
We've helped out with our painters purchasing group, and you really have, and this is not a bunch of glorified ass kissing, although I'm not above it. not above it, but Estimate Rocket in the painting industry has become the most widely used estimating platform. People love it. People recommend it. And when people ask me, you know, the platform that they would look for, I always recommend Estimate Rocket because that's what our members recommend. It's not what, you know, I only go out and seek people that I have organically heard from our members, because the last thing I ever want to do is recommend something to our members that doesn't work, but I don't have to do that because they told me to reach out to you. I did not have to come hunting you down. Our members are like, this works really well. It's simple and easy to understand. And it has been a huge benefit to a lot of folks. And in closing, whenever anyone looks at joining our program, and they say that they have Estimate Rocket, I'm always excited because I know that it will be a lot easier for me to put together a customer reactivation or a retention program for the year for them. And I know that they will be a lot more likely to bolt on the persuasive elements in the sales process that both lead up to and that follow the production of a professional accurate estimate. So those are all things that Estimate Rocket helps you do. Don't take my word for it. You know, ask our members.
Oh, thank you so much. Awesome.
Did not expect that. Thank you so much, Brandon.
And that means a lot.
It does. I only tell the truth, which occasionally is helpful, but is often harmful. And so I just let the chips fall where they may, and I just put it out there. So
thank you.
If you don't have an estimating system right now that is production rate driven, you're losing money, and you need to look into something. And I think Estimate Rocket would be a good fit for you to try out. You know, may not be your cup of tea, you know, but you should at least do the free trial and see what happens.
Perfect.
Thank you so much
for being on the podcast.
Well, I appreciate both of you. I've known y'all for a long time. It's great to talk to you. And I do look forward to seeing somebody from Estimate Rocket in Weston, Florida, the last week in January.
Yeah, well, we love you, Brandon.
Oh, thanks. You and my mother.
This is Estimate Rocket Radio.
join our team at estimaterocket.com.
There it is. There's my controversial piece. Yes, I got it. It's
not controversial.
I'm just kidding.
You shouldn't eat Spam for three meals. That is controversial. It may be controversial, but it is also accurate.
Oh, but they have, if you go to Hawaii, there's many flavors of Spam. You can get pineapple. You can get hot and spicy.
I stand corrected. Spam all around.